Hi, everybody. Alan Arnett here with another podcast on the blog on alanarnett.com. It is Sunday, July 24th, and this is the weekend update, primarily around K2 in Pakistan. Oh, my. What a week. What a summer we have had in the Karakoram, with actually record summits across almost all the mountains, but definitely on K2. We're approaching somewhere in the neighborhood of 175 overall summits on K2, and that just completely blows away the best year ever, which was in 2018 with 62 summits. It could be triple the highest that it ever was. You know, K2 is one of those mountains that it goes years without having a summit at all. In fact, there were 32 years since 1954, and that's when the first summit on K2 occurred, a year after the summit on Everest. But it's been 32 years, 32 times, when there's been no summits on K2. And comparing that with only 9 times since 1953 that there's been zero summits on Everest. So you can see that K2 really is very, very sporadic in its success. Most of the time, though, you know, at least what I have since I've been watching it, you can attribute that to weather. You know, sometimes, you know, other things got involved, but usually it was the weather which stopped climbers. And that's been the history in the past, let's say, handful of years since, 2010 or so. However, in 2022, I mean, you know, there was a spat of bad weather last week, but then this past week, oh my gosh, it just broke loose and people started heading up. We had over 150 summits on one day on July 20th, 21st. It took people, actually pretty good timing. The Sherpas went up, the incredibly strong Sherpa from AK Expeditions and Madison Mountaineering fixed the route to the summit. They had to fight off some high winds in order to do it. Took them a little longer than they expected. They got the ropes to the top at 7 o'clock at night, which is incredibly late because they like to get it done and get back down to the camp in daylight. But in this case, they just went ahead and pushed on, and that opened the doors. And so, you know, hats off to every team, every person that summited this year. The Nepali operators really dominated with a combined 88 summits, and that's of Sherpas and clients. And, the teams that had the biggest numbers were Elite Expeditions with 33. Imagine Nepal had 23, AK Expeditions had 11, 7 Summits Treks had 11. And then in terms of Western operators, Garrett Madison, they had the first team up. They had 15 people on top. And then Fruitenbach Adventures had 14. Summit Karakoram had at least 4, probably 10. And Karakoram Expeditions had somewhere between 10 and 15 or so. So it's hard to get these numbers. There's really no unified tracking source that's free and easily accessible to the public like there is with the Himalayan database for the Pakistani 8,000-meter mountain. So do our best to kind of track this stuff and keep up with it. So what is going on? You know, if you think about it, I get this question a lot about, okay, Alan, so, you know, when you summited K2 in 2014, there were only 48 people that summited. And on the day we summited, there was, I don't know, maybe 10 at the most. Our little team of 6, you know, we summited, and then there were probably a few other people around. I know that there was at least one other person joined us on the summit. Previous day, where there was around 30 or so from 7 Summits Treks that was a logistics operator that year. But this year, what changed to cause the numbers to basically triple? So, okay, I'm going to eat a little crow here, because in 2016, I wrote a blog with a title that K2 will never become Everest. So I was convinced of that. Well, I'm here to say I was wrong. So let's take a look at what I said, what I thought were the reasons, 6 primary reasons why K2 would never become Everest. And let's kind of break it down as to what was different this year. So first off, you know, K2 compared to almost every other 8,000-meter mountain is more technical. It's, you know, higher than all of them except for Everest. And so forth. So in that context, you know, being a high altitude technical, that limits the attraction to most people. So, but if you look at what happened in the spring of 2022, just a couple of months ago in Nepal, we saw multiple 8,000-meter mountains summited, and sometimes multiple summits by the same person. And that was kind of unheard of. We really hadn't seen that in this scale like we saw in the springtime. So what was going on is a model that I've talked about quite a bit in Nepal, and that same model is now being applied in the Karakoram all the way from Nanga Parbat, you know, to the Gasher Bronze, but especially on K2 and to some extent on Broad Peak as well. So Seven Summits Treks, they get the credit for kind of pioneering this overall model by using incredibly strong Sherpas to go up and fix the rope, to dig in the boot path, establish the high camps, opening the door for the clients to come up behind them once that, you know, that entire route is fixed. Now, this is a little different than what's been going on Everest in the past. Typically, that's been a team of Sherpas that have gone up and done it, but they've kind of done it not with the overpowering manpower that we're seeing happening across these mountains now, across especially these big 8,000 meter mountains. So what happens is the clients, you know, at this point, a lot of people are using hypoxico tents or other mechanisms to pre-acclimatize at home to get their red blood cells up to at least 17, 20,000 feet at home. They arrive. Typically, they're taking helicopters in. That's another huge difference than what we've seen in the past. They're running on oxygen flow rates at 4 to 6 liters per minute instead of the traditional 2 to 4. They also, because of this extra oxygen flows, often they have two Sherpas with them to carry all the extra oxygen. And also, frankly, to provide that support. You know, you've got two highly talented, skilled Sherpas climbing by your side. That increases your confidence and gives you a little bit more, you know, I don't know, just kind of a touchy-feely of continuing to go up. And also, there were a lot of people this year on K2 that came in well-prepared. So kudos to them for getting there. We often talk about inexperienced clients, but this year, I mean, certainly there were some that, you know, maybe that, you know, they were gambling by letting K2 be their first 8,000 meter mountain. You know, by and far, we saw some really strong performances. And, you know, and one of the metrics, one of the measures of that is that we only had one death, and that was an Afghan climber, 34 years old, just tragic. And he suffered some type of altitude-related condition, died at camp, right below Camp 3. And then right now, sadly, there's a 61-year-old Canadian, which is missing. And he went missing between Camp 2 and Camp 1, descending after an acclimatization rotation. They have a search party underway, so it's way too early to talk about, you know, what the results of that's going to be. So, but bottom line is, if you look at the number of people on K2 this year, there were 475 permits issued, and roughly, I'm estimating somewhere in the neighborhood of 250 actually were at base camp, participated in the rotations, and then are going to make an attempt or already have. And so that's going to take us in the neighborhood around 200 or so that'll actually summit this year. So, you know, to have one death and all of that, as tragic as that one death was, it's amazing. And a lot of that can be contributed to the way the Sherpas ran the operations, the other operators like Garrett and Lucas and other people on the mountain, but also to the weather. And, you know, the weather always has the last say on these mountains. So number one in my list of why Everest would never become K2 is a technical high altitude climb that limits the attraction. Well, it seems like this year that's not the case. The second one was that back in 2016, I wrote that the local mountaineering support in Pakistan pales in comparison to what's available in Everest. And that was very true. And to some extent, that is still true today. But what the Sherpa companies did, so like the AK Expeditions, they brought over their own Sherpas, very highly trained, very skilled, experienced Sherpas that have cut their teeth on the Himalayan, Nepal Himalayan mountains. You know, a lot of them have 10, 15, 20 summits of Everest and multiple summits of Dalagiri, Makalu, and others. So they were very, very skilled and very capable of guiding on K2. So they brought these guys over. There were a handful of Pakistani high altitude climbers that also were in support. So again, kudos to those guys. But the reality is that there simply are not enough high altitude support climbers that are Pakistani that live in that area to support certainly the masses that we saw this year. So the companies resolved that by bringing over Sherpas from Nepal. So problem solved. The next one was K2's weather is worse than Everest, thus reducing the summit success. You know, this one is a variable. Some years it's bad, other years it's great. This year we saw good weather. Previous years, as I already mentioned, we've seen horrible weather. So, you know, that one is kind of a, it's kind of a toss the coin. But Everest, K2 does have a reputation for having more unstable and less predictable weather than Everest. And that scares some people off. But again, this year, didn't happen. The next one was that K2's death rate is higher than Everest, and that scares away a lot of people. This is the one statistic, I think, that stops a lot of people from climbing K2. I know when I told friends I was going to K2, they looked at me and said, Alan, you don't want to die, do you? Don't you know that one in four people who try it die? Yeah, I knew that summit statistic, and I went ahead and did it anyway. And, you know, nobody has a death wish when they go to the mountain, but here's what's going on. Now that we've seen more and more people summit over the last, let's say since 2015, that percentage has gone from 25% down now to 16%. So K2 is not quite as deadly as it once was. So that scary reputation has been mitigated somewhat. Another reason a lot of people don't like to go to, or don't want to go to the Karakoram, is they feel like getting a helicopter rescue in case they get in trouble is either too expensive or in some cases impossible. Similar to the north side of Everest, where the Chinese prevent any helicopter rescues from taking place, and that may be changing. In the Karakoram, because K2 and its sister mountains in that northern territories are part of what are called the disputed region or the disputed zone, with India primarily over Kashmir, but it can be a volatile environment. We've also saw back in the early 2000s, around 2012 or so, this mass murder at Nananga Parbat Base Camp. It was horrible. And so that violence has scared away a lot of people. But also the whole idea that if you get sick at Camp 1 or Camp 2 on K2 or at Base Camp, that helicopter rescue is incredibly expensive, $20,000 to $30,000 to have a helicopter come pick you up, even more if they have to go search it even higher on the mountain. And obviously that's very dangerous. So the reason it's so expensive is because Pakistan flies these helicopters in pairs. And that's kind of a military protocol, if you will. So they're almost flying as if they're in a war zone. So as a result, it drives the cost up dramatically. Compare that with a few thousand dollars in Nepal, because those helicopters are run by private companies. So, you know, it's expensive, but something also changed this year. For the first time that I'm aware of, that helicopters routinely flew clients over the Khumbu or over the Baltero Glacier to base camp. And also they're flying them back out of K2 base camp back to Skardu. You know, that to get, you know, to charge $20,000, which is what I'm told that the military is charging for that, you know, that flight. It's not even a rescue. It's just really transportation. It's an air taxi. And if you get four or five people that can fit in that helicopter, you split it four or five ways. Now you're talking, you know, $5,000, not $20,000. And this is a suggestion that there's some pretty well-heeled, well-funded people that are on K2 this year. So talking about using helicopters to fly over the Baltero Glacier, that's another reason that a lot of people, you know, were kind of discouraged about going to K2, is that the trek to base camp is really long and arduous. There's not a lot of amenities. In fact, there's none. You sleep in tents the entire way. The concept of tea houses do not exist on the Baltero. You sleep in tents on the very rocky, cold, uneven Baltero Glacier. Is some of the most beautiful scenery I've ever seen in my life. I've only done it twice, and I wish I could go again. Maybe I will one day. It's just a stunning, stunning environment. But it also takes several days to go across that to get to the glacier, to get to base camp. It's like 60 miles. So that's a really long way. And, you know, that can zap a lot of your energy on the way. You can get sick on the way. So it discourages a lot of people. So this year, some people just said, well, forget it. I'll just take a helicopter and fly over. And that suggests, again, that we had some people on K2 this year that have got some pretty good bank accounts. So, you know, given all of these things, you know, it just, the equation changed in 2022. The mountain was perceived as being less dangerous. The support was higher. The weather was better. Of course, that you didn't know that till you got there. But it seems like that to some extent that, you know, the mountain community, mountaineering community has a short memory. It really doesn't think about the years on Everest when of about, let's see, about 8 or 9, 10 years when 10 or more people lost their lives. They don't think about in K2 in 1986 and 2008, where 10, 15 people died on K2. You know, all of these things from basically natural disasters. So, you know, and also there's a lot of marketing going on about superhuman people that are climbing mountains and, you know, and that they, you know, come with me and I will get you safely to the mountain. And you know what? A lot of them did. And hats off to them. Congratulations to them. But there's also a lot of rolling the dice that goes on. So, you know, when you look at the future of 8,000 meter mountains, you know, I don't know. I think to some extent this year, 2022, that we saw a seismic shift in it. You know, more 8,000ers were summited by Sherpas than ever before in history. On Everest, the grand total since 1953 now has Sherpas ahead of clients in terms of the raw number of summits. Over on K2, I think the same thing has happened there. Probably now we're approaching somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 people that have summited K2. And honestly, we may be seeing more Sherpas than foreigners crossing over here in the next couple of years. So, you know, times change. You know, times change. I did a great video interview with Adventure Consultants Managing Director, CEO Guy Cotter a couple of days ago. If you haven't watched that video, that podcast, or listened to it, I really encourage you to, because Guy is uniquely qualified to have some informed comments and opinions and views on the mountaineering world. You know, he's been guiding and climbing himself for 30 years. You know, he was on Everest over on Nupsi when the 1996 disaster happened. You know, he's been running Adventure Consultants. He personally has, I don't know what it is, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8,000 meter mountains. He stood on the true summit of Manaslu. And so he really understands what's going on. And so as we were talking about this, he made the comparison that there was outrage in the rock climbing world when it went over from traditional climbing, rock climbing, to what's called sport climbing. And that's where there's placed anchors already in the rope, using bolts primarily, where the climber just goes up and they attach their carabiner and their rope to it and they keep going. So they don't have to be bothered with carrying up their own rope or carrying up their rack and, you know, and putting in anchors and all of that, going up and climbing these walls. You know, a lot of people said rock climbing has now died, is over. Same thing happened when David Brashears got Dick Bass and Frank Wells up to the top of all the seven summits. A lot of people said, the age of exploration is over, it's now commercialization. And those cries got even louder in the early 90s when Hall and Ball and Scott Fisher, you know, took $65,000 to get people up to the top of Mount Everest. You know, every sport has a transition and evolution, all the way from, you know, breaking the 4-minute mile to, you know, going solo across the ocean in a in a sailboat, to swimming the English Channel. A lot of stuff that we say will never happen happens in sports, and the same evolution is happening right now. There was no reason to think that what's happening on K2 this year was never going to happen, because we saw the trajectory happening in Nepal, and it just made perfect sense to carry over that same model to the other 8,000 meter mountains in Pakistan. So, you know, things change. Congratulations to everybody that summited this year, but not everybody did it in the style that I'm discussing right now. Let's just take a moment and do a tip of the hat and a congratulations to Dennis Uparov, who summited Gasherbrum 2. He just did the other day, he did Broad Peak in like 14 hours. And so today he started at 3 a.m. from base camp on G2 and summited about 6:20 to witness a beautiful sunset. So just amazing what the strength of this man and what he does. And of course, he climbed it without oxygen, no ropes, no support, just himself. So, you know, just when you think that the sport has been diluted and, you know, and everybody complains about Starbucks at the top and the yellow brick road is paved, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that have the whole spirit and the willingness, the skills and the strength to do it the old fashioned way. And sometimes the old fashioned way is the best way. All right. Climb on. This is Alan. And remember, memories are everything.